OTB
AM. In association with Air, get Air Sport free with Air Broadband.
Michael Darragh-McCauley, he was in studio with us last week, and if you're just joining us, you'll be able to catch the full interview on youtube.com/offtheball, and we'll have the podcast up in the next half an hour or so as well. He was in studio with us last week, but thanks to Fanta, and Fanta Sandstorm is back with a bang for 2018, inviting the most adventurous thrill seekers across Ireland to test their limits on the 5,000, or on the 5K, I should say, beach run. Fanta Sandstorm will take place at Dublin's Dollymount Strand on the 9th of June and Kerry's Ballyhig Beach on the 14th of July. Tickets are on sale now and they'll only cost you €15. Check out hashtag Fanta Sandstorm.
All right, it's time for Stock GAA. Michael Darragh-McCauley is here. How are you?
I'm great.
Are you impressed by our new surrounds? You've been checking to see if we had any good memorabilia.
Yeah.
We've got a
fierce, fancy, yeah.
Andy Lee belt.
Oh, Andy's a good fella. Yeah, any of those basketball signed or anything?
Do you want to get a marker there?
you can do better than me now, but I was expecting like LeBron on it or something.
We've got no LeBron yet at the moment.
Okay, well, we need to work on that, but it's nice.
Do you keep memorabilia? Is that something you have?
No. And it's a real guy thing now. No one swaps jerseys or does any of that stuff anymore.
Why not?
I don't know.
You just respect your jersey so much you can't give it away?
It's a bit ridiculous, isn't it? Like, do other teams swap jerseys?
I just reading last week, Tomas O'Shea.
He regrets not swapping. Dermot Connolly asked him to swap a jersey and he wouldn't swap it with him.
Yeah, it was a provincial, inter-provincial.
Was it the Interpro?
Yeah, it was.
I can't remember. And that was his one regret because he was like, oh, I never swapped jerseys. I presume it's when you get to the stage in your career where it's like, oh, free shit is cool, where you probably want to trade it. And then after a while, the free stuff just becomes a little bit of Yeah, exactly. And then it's kind of like...
Owen likes his junkets, by the way, so that's where he's speaking about himself here.
Like, I mean, I went on a Tour de France junket last year. I don't even cycle, but I've just been wearing the Skoda leggings all around the house all the time. That's all I do.
Yeah.
It's not what they're called, is it?
Skoda leggings?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think of any... Paddy Harrington, I used to like... He's like a neighbour of mine, so we used to like just call into his house when I was in primary school.
Right.
So we were allowed to leave. I used to like run home at 12:30. Like, we're not leaving primary school now, but we're allowed to leave and run home. I used to put on my little microwave pizza and eat it. But then sometimes we used to go and call into his house just like, hi, it's Pádraig here. And like, he was never there. But his dad, like, God rest him, was like, so nice. And he like, he brought us into the house and all.
Right, cool.
And he was like, Pádraig had this, like, shouldn't be ratting him out here now, but he had this like, this putting green in his house, in his father's house, and he like, where he had like maybe 50 putters lined up. Dad came in, like, let us use them and all, and then like, gave us like a jersey, like I say, a cartel shirt of his, like I wasn't even a big golfer or anything, like, and like, and a signed, or a ball that he used when he won the World Cup doubles
right.
things.
Yeah.
Yeah, really nice one. Yeah, and then, I lost them both.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, I gave the shirt to my dad, but the ball got put in with a big thing of golf balls, and I got, it's gone. So
you're not in any way sentimental about any of the stuff that you've...
Yeah, no, like, you start off being sentimental, like, the first ever, like, thing you get with a Dublin crest on it, you're like, I am going to be buried in this, I'm going to get married in it, and I'm going to be buried in it, and this is going to be, like, my piece, and then you get given another piece, and that kind of drifts off a little bit. Yeah, and then it kind of happens, like, your first ever All-Ireland final jersey, your first ever everything, and then it just, it's just another piece of gear.
Yeah.
It's all good, yeah.
Any basketball stuff? Do you have any American basketball stuff?
Yeah, like, I had a jersey signed by Latrell Sprewell.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember him?
Yeah, he punched the guy in the crowd. No, he throttled the guy, didn't he?
Yeah. And he was also famous for making, do you remember when I was, like, in, like, Pimp My Ride? Do you remember the spinners? Do you remember the wheels that, like, you stopped and they keep spinning?
Yeah.
He, like, made them.
That was
he invented them or something, like, so like they were like the Latrell spinners. I don't know why it ever happened to him. Yeah, maybe he punched the dude. So I have signed jersey. I lost that as well.
Right.
I see a
pattern emerging here.
Right. Like, yeah. It's fair. Yeah.
We were obviously talking during the week about LeBron and the quality of play that he's currently exhibiting, and Owen reckons that he's better than MJ pretty much because he never saw MJ play.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, the way millennials ruin everything. Millennials have now ruined MJ is what I'm starting to feel on
They're
Twitter.
They're real friends as well, but go on, yeah.
Yeah, without question, yeah. So, like, I genuinely believe that LeBron James is the best player to ever play basketball. And I can see you grimacing right here.
This is from your Instagram a couple of years back.
My one Instagram ever tweet. What do you call it? Are you asking me, like, is he better? Like,
well, I'm just putting it. No, I'm just telling you that if you believe Michael Jordan's better than LeBron James, then you're wrong.
It's aggression in here. It's like it's tough. It's like if you're like, what are you gonna count on? Are you counting on the rings? Are you counting on the play? Like, I don't know, like MJ was just like Like, do you know what I mean? I used to, like, dream about him, as creepy as that was. Like, I used to, like, be out in my backyard and imaginary, like, an aggressive, playing an imaginary Michael Jordan in front of me, like.
Because you would have just caught the last couple of years
ago. Yeah,
right?
Like, I had this weird one for you that I'll tell you, right? We had this, like, you know the way Americans, like, latch on to their family heritage and stuff? So, like, we had these, like, long-lost American cousins, and I don't know, hopefully they don't watch off the ball, right? These long-lost American cousins that, like, we had, like, met or phoned or something, and then they were, like, they got in contact with us, and they were like, can we come stay with you? And, like, we were like, oh, okay, we don't really know you, but maybe, like, and, like, I was whatever, like, I was, like, 8, 9, 10 kind of ballpark, and they came and stayed with us, and it was, I think it was meant to be a bit of a strange day. Like, they like basketball, so I remember kind of playing with them, so that was all good. Turns out your man was the junior coach of the Chicago Bulls. This is like 94, 95, and like the big time, like, and I was like, I didn't even know if he was spoofing at the time or whatever, like, but we used to just be out back and he was showing us drills, and his son was my brother's age, and they'd be out playing in my backyard, and then, like, we'd all be playing in the backyard and playing the basketball the whole time, and, like, I think the stay wasn't too smooth as far as I can remember, but they left, right? And then about a month or two afterwards, like the exact size of a dishwasher, arrived at the front door, this size, a meter squared, and arrived at the door, and we opened it, and it was packed to the hilt with Chicago Bulls gear and randomly a birdhouse. a birdhouse and Chicago Bulls gear, and it was all the three-peat stuff. So it was all like they, you know, they made a lot of stuff for the three-peat and stuff. So, like, I was just clobbered in three-peat gear, like, and it was like no better gear in the world to me at the time. Three-peat gear, and I don't even think we even put up the birdhouse. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just going to flashback it on.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I saw, like, I should track down that dude's name. I don't even know his name. I wonder if we could find out, like, is he still with them or what's the story? Yeah.
That'd be a long career if he was, but maybe, you know, maybe, yeah, like GM of some other team.
Yeah.
All these years,
I'm gonna go to work on that, yeah.
Or maybe that's the reason they're shit now, is because he left.
Maybe he was, like, actually Bill Jackson's, like, yeah. I'm in the middle of reading his book, actually, The 11 Rings. I read that one.
Yeah, I started it.
Is there a reason? Is there a reason that we haven't finished it?
It's very dense. I'm like, the bit about his family is really interesting.
Yeah, so, like, I bought it because I was, like, interested in him as a person, and, like, and the kind of different aspect that he took to coaching and to, like, the fact that he was kind of into
Buddhism.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And there's more kind of rounded approach and philosophy to it. And that's what I wanted to get after. He talks a lot about the intricacies of the 70s Knicks team.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, like, I wasn't interested in that either.
So I haven't read it off, but it's there. It's there, yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty dense. I also think that maybe it's the best version of him.
He makes himself out as being surrounded, but, like, you have to be a hard ass at that level. Like, there's no way you can't be, like, so you have to be able to make some tough decisions. But he's an interesting character, yeah.
Yeah, definitely would like to get him on the show.
Work on that one, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I want to talk to you about, which you mentioned immediately upon arriving in here, was Tupac and how you're now Tupac's official booster in Ireland.
Me and Pac are going way back at this stage, yeah. So
you mentioned this in an interview one time. You did a...
This is like, I didn't think that was, like, between me and, like, six people, and, like, someone tweeted about it, and I was like, it was made for a headline. So that's the reason I got out. Sorry, go on.
Well, actually, I didn't really want to talk about Tupac. All I want to talk about is Post Malone, because, you know, Post Malone is the greatest artist in the history of music right now, which I'm sure you'll definitely agree with.
I'm not giving that any of my time. I did, like, even today alone, like, people keep talking about this dude, and I don't want to be, like, so some of my, like, mates are real stuck in their ways, like, no music, no new music is good, like, nothing will ever beat other old music and stuff, and I'm like, I'm more open-minded, and I try to keep on top of it, or try and listen to new music and stuff, but your man Post Malone keeps coming up. He's very, like, I don't know, like, I'm not feeling it, like.
Yeah, like, there's being open-minded on the one side, and there's being a fan of Post Malone, which is just stupid, on the other hand. Like, I mean, anybody who's a fan of Post Malone, like, it probably just isn't worth our time, really.
Yeah, fair. Like, I don't know enough about the dude, to be honest, to comment on him, but he doesn't feature heavily in my life at the moment.
Yeah, keep it that way, I think. I think we've got the Tupac headline coming up next as well. So just so you know exactly what an unbelievable storm this was. There you go.
Oh, that's classic.
I need to be wearing a do-rag. That wasn't fair. Like, I need to be wearing that. Like, there's an everyone's player. That's all ridiculous, isn't it? So yeah.
Was Tupac one of your biggest teachers growing up?
Like,
You listen to an album a lot, or a certain
who are your biggest teacher that you remember? Like, do you know what I mean? Like I remember like some of my primary school teachers and some things that I did, and it was the reason I got into primary school teaching. I was like, that was amazing, the influence that guy had on my life. I was like, I'd love to have that influence on a kid, and that's why I got into primary school. But like what do you remember? Like, you don't really remember like the rivers and Leinster and stuff after a while. You remember some of the other bits that they instilled in you. And Tupac was, I was just obsessed with him as a kid, yeah. But it was around that time, do you know what I mean? Like, that was around the 94, 95, 96 time.
Yeah.
Like, Chicago Bulls, I was a product of my environment at the time. Environment wouldn't be the word. I was a product of my time. And I was just very influenced by American culture at the time. Do you know what I mean? Answer me this. Someone asked me about this, about why on the Ireland versus Big, or sorry, Tupac versus Biggie, yeah? Why did Ireland all take Tupac's side?
I'd say California Love got more play in this part of the world than anything that Biggie was doing. And so everybody kind of thought Biggie was either impenetrable or inaccessible, or that's my random off the top of my head theory. If I had a little bit of time to think about this.
Yeah, like, so it was thrown to me, like, and then I tried to like shoot the breeze with one of my mates about it, like. And like, we like it's almost so, like, I remember one of my, like, a lad in my class who was like more Tupac ahead than me, and he wanted to like move to like the west coast of Ireland. Like, he was like, that's a true story. I won't name and shame him, but he wanted to move to the west coast, like, because he was like, you know, and he wanted to like sell anything that ended up in the east coast, all this ridiculous stuff. But we're kind of thinking that he's like, Tupac was more kind of like fighting the system, kind of like, I know he kind of contradicts himself in his later years as an artist, but like, he like was kind of like more kind of like real, like, against the oppression stuff, and then we were kind of have that colonial past that we were fighting from.
Yeah.
That kind of 800 years buzz. That was the only kind of like half kind of bit of knowledge that I kind of scraped out of that shooting the breeze with my mate. Yeah.
Yeah. But when you think about it, there would have been like three people in Ireland who were playing it and had access to it, and there would have been MTV showing videos.
Yeah.
And that's it. There was no. Maybe you could write away for magazines that would take a year to arrive from America.
So. Source magazine, yeah.
Was that what you were getting? I don't know, like, or maybe Tower Records would have some stuff that...
No, like, it was all MTV, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
Back in the Kinsteins days, now watching this, they won't know about that MTV Select. Richard Blackwood.
He's like, what's this stuff you're talking about?
He's like, who are you?
The lads click, click, clicking.
My question is, like, was this actually the popular thing to do at the time? Because, I mean, if you're there in 94, 95, 96... I'm sure everybody's like, Oasis is a thing, or else Blur is a thing, and we can have those conversations. And it's like, no, Tupac is a thing. They're like, no, well, screw you, like, Oasis, like, Blur is a thing.
Like, don't get me wrong, I'm a crazy Oasis head. Like, I've seen them loads of times, and I'll always take Blur's head. I know about the lyrics and stuff. I know it all. I've had that argument. But they had, it was the basketball. Was the biggest thing in my life at the time. Mm. So I was looking at MJ and all those sort of guys, and then like trying to get any sort of information. Like, I was reading, what was the basketball magazine? Is XXL? I used to always get that. Like, I used to like make my trip to Easton's to get my XXL magazine, and that would all have like all those guys giving their interviews, their 20 questions, whatever, and they say, who are you listening to? And then, you know what I mean?
Like
that would be my kind of gateway to it.
What was your gateway to basketball in the first place?
Gateway to basketball was my school. My school was just, a guy called Jerry O'Brien, like, single-handedly, like, created, like, year after year of international basketball players. So we had, like, up there, like, it was him that just started a big basketball program in the school.
Right.
We managed to be good at Gaelic football, and we've lots of like Steinsey and Harrington come out of that school and a few others. He was just pushed basketball. So we played it every morning. We played basketball for an hour before we came to school.
Right.
And they stayed for an hour nearly every day after school. I put the breakfast thing into our school as well. But so that was it. Like, and my brother played a bit as well. So that's where I got something out of it.
It's interesting when you say that. What was your gateway into rap? And you say basketball, and everybody's like, yeah, fair enough. I don't think there is a sport like basketball that's so culturally ingrained.
Yeah, no. I suppose, I don't know, the culture thing's huge. Like, you know, the Fab Five documentary and stuff, like, and they really, they defined the culture at the time, that they were just like, no, that's not what we're about. We're bringing our culture into the game, like, and like the way they dress and the way they act and the music as well. It's a huge part of that kind of that way of life. Yeah,
and it seems to have maintained right to the current day. Like, a lot of sports have lost their sensibilities of the 90s for sure. Whereas I think
to a certain extent anyway, basketball has kind of kept that. I mean, there is a certain sense of individual identity for sure, even just in fashion, for example. Like, the walking into the dressing rooms is a theatre in itself.
It's great, isn't it? Like someone sent me a photo of CP3 and the boys. Yes, did you see them? They were looking fresh. They were looking fresh. They're all wearing the hats and the multi odds. Like, I was taking notes. So, yeah. I'm going to be walking out of Leinster quarterfinal now.
We need to start doing that when the bus pulls up in Croke Park, that, you know, there's...
So, that should be so loud. How much more interesting would that be, like, if we're allowed to wear our own gear and then we have our gear set up, walk in our, like, badass suits and stuff, like. I'm well up for that, like.
Never going to happen, though.
That's never going to happen, because we have to wear O'Neill's till the day we die.
Or just tell the bus driver to stop 200 yards earlier and just get out of the bus earlier and, I don't know, just make an eye contact with the camera or something. Do something that's not fashion-based.
Yeah.
There's definitely an idea there.
Now we need to spread our wings. Look, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Ridiculous, like, that everyone is wearing the same tracksuit. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, let's get a bit of identity about this. We're not trying to be fashion queens. Like, it's just like, come on, let's open.
Seriously, I agree with you, right? And I do think that there's a weird Irish cultural fear of anybody showing a sign of difference.
It's really kind of autistic in the way they hate change. Like, it's so, I don't say backwards, it's so, like, but it's just the cogs of the GAA often move so slowly, and so people are afraid of losing their little grasp of power that nothing changes. And, like, I know, and there is a lot of forward thinking people. But certain things that, like, I think one of the biggest gripes to me is how the game is marketed. I use the example of like you don't need to like Gaelic football to enjoy a match, but I think you do. I think you do. Like, if you don't enjoy Gaelic football, you should still be able to come and enjoy the performance that is put on, the show that is put on. Like, we went to a basketball game, went to a Celtics game with a girlfriend, and, like, she couldn't spell basketball. She's no interest, like, literally no interest. And we were, like, up in the bleachers, like, there were crap seats, and yeah. They were like, she, like, had the best time ever. Like, she was able to go in, like, get her, like, hot dogs and nachos. Music came on. They shut down the lights in the crowd. Everyone came out with this big, like, handshakes. Like, steam came up as they ran out. They all, like, halftime came. They all fired T-shirts up. Like, and she was, like, enthralled by the experience. She couldn't tell you if you paid her who won. Like, no interest. But she had a great experience.
Yeah.
I think that needs to be brought into GAA in a big way. Like, I think we need to sell experience. I remember we brought a lot of foreign people to a game last year, like, and I, like, it wasn't a great game, like, and I had to apologise to them. I was like, that wasn't good enough. That wasn't a good performance. Like,
yeah.
Half time of the All Ireland final. Do you know what I mean? Like, that should be like a showpiece. I we don't have to go full Homer Simpson on it and fill it with water and you know what I mean. But, like, you can put on, like, more than just a bear on a stage, or like, do you know what I mean? Like, let's go at it. Like, is that a fair point?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that the marketing campaigns should target the halftime All Ireland football final with their new ads, and everybody should tune in and go the way they do for the Super Bowl. It wouldn't cost that much.
Yeah,
you could easily ring fence it, and suddenly you have the brands all talking about it. And
look, I'm all about the kids getting their chance to play at halftime. When little girls in my class got a chance to play at halftime last year, and that was great, amazing experience for her. And, like, I'm all about that. But, like, the GAA is great in that, like, nearly every child in Dublin gets to play in Croke Park at some stage when they're growing up these days. Yeah. And I just think for that one in particular, like, let's start marketing the sport a bit better and kind of put it out there. It should be at an international standard. Why isn't U2 playing there? Like, do you know what I mean? Why isn't it at that level? Like, that's absolutely laughed upon to say that U2 will play there. But why not? Like,
yeah, well, you could easily, if it's not half time, it could be the half hour beforehand, where between the minors and the, or whatever, yeah, game they're going to play.
Or make it like all the tailgating and stuff. I know we've all these alcohol issues and stuff, but, like, a festival, make an event of it, like, and like no one does sports like the Americans.
Yeah.
Like, and they know how to sell sports and how to enjoy their sports. And
they tailgate when the weather's really bad. Like, and we're talking about during the summertime, we could actually do that kind of thing.
They tailgate in the snow and they're all, like, sitting there, like, their hot water bottles.
It gets better in the snow, apparently.
Yeah.
I think it's a very Irish thing, though, to kind of say, ah, sure, it's all about the game. If you do anything else, it's going to take away from the game. When in fact, it's no. Everything you add to it will just enhance your experience of the entire day. The game will still be the thing that gets the biggest cheer, but it is possible to cheer for something else at a different time of the day. Enjoy your halftime. It's not just about focusing on this very almost holy thing
that
is obviously going to be the centerpiece of the day.
Yeah, no, big time. I'm all about that. And I think, like, it was particularly in Dublin now, I think we have forward-thinking people. And, like, I've talked to them about that, and, like, they find it difficult to kind of get things moving. So I don't know what the answer is, but I just kind of, I think there's definitely scope to kind of make it a...
You know that now that you've mentioned it, it'll become a thing. This is you want that tailgating half time? You want U2 to play? It's your new Tupac. I hope you're ready.
Oh, no, I'm not as well versed on U2 as Tupac.
You should actually say on the record now, Biggie was the best inspiration of my life, and then that becomes the headline, and then everybody just gets confused as hell.
I should balance it up. Like I'm pro Biggie. I'm up there.
I'm a little bit obsessed with. Gaelic footballers and hurlers who are teachers, because there's definitely a bunch of people who did it just to play football or hurling, but it doesn't sound to me like that's what you did.
People 100% do make life choices because of football, and football probably does affect a lot of people's lives in college and their work schedule. I didn't know what I wanted to get into it when I was in college. I kind of did an arts degree and kind of got through that and stuff. But I did really want to become a teacher, and it was purely based, as I said, on teachers who influenced me. And I think it's cool to have an influence on a child like that. So I've had no interest. Like, I've been offered all the sales jobs and all that sort of crack, and it's just of no interest to me. I couldn't sleep at night doing that stuff. I had to go back. I had to go back doing the hard way. I had to go back to do the Leaving Cert, do my Irish, and all that sort of stuff. It's a tough gig, and you'll find out fairly quickly once you're in the classroom whether it's for you or not. It's going well.
So that's good to hear, because you do definitely feel like. There are some managers who are kind of like, you should just do this for a couple of years. We'll win our lot, and then after that, you can move into something else.
I think only from an independent point of view, like Jim and Pat have both been very, very accommodating, and they know that our exams come first, and like they never try and pressure you. And I think there are other managers that would say, look, we have a game that day. Like, you can, exams won't be there forever, kind of thing. Whereas both Jim and Pat have been both very like, get your exams, come back to us, because like they know that if I'm sweating over an exam, and I fail it or whatever, like it all leads on to my performance. Like, you can nearly tell if a fella is doing badly in exams about how he's playing on the pitch. Do you know what I mean? So I think both of the lads, like I couldn't compliment them more on that side of it, in fairness. But yeah, like at 100%, there's like 100% lads go back to do college courses, to do masters and stuff that they don't have a real interest in, but it facilitates their lifestyle as a footballer. Yeah,
it's like. They should be using that time to do stuff they want to do, and actually taking the advantage of having access to career guidance and career advice that might be slightly better than most people get. I think that actually it's something the GAA could start looking into, is like, oh, we will help you to become a better player at the end of your career. That's what we're in return for everything you're giving us. We're going to help you find the thing that you're good at and like and want to spend time at.
The GPA have been good at that. In fairness to them, and they have career guidance guys there who've been very good, and they've helped myself and a lot of other people who I know in that regard. So like I definitely have to give them a big up on that. When you're kind of coming out in your early 20s, and
all you want to do is play football.
People are just shining this big holy grail, shiny light of intercounty football at you, like, and then like life in your 30s, 40s, 50s is like this small little glowing thing in the background, where you have this big shining light in front of you, and that's all anyone talks. No one even talks to you about this thing. No one even cares what you're gonna do in college. It's like, what's this? What's going on here? What's happening here? So like that's why people put all the focus and emphasis into that. Like, so
have you got that balance right now and at your own level? Like, do you have the context of what the future is going to be like, and actually you can live enough in the moment to still be good at football?
I think so. I think I've gotten better at it. I think it's easy to get kind of self obsessed with it, but it's kind of hard. Like, you kind of have to find that balance. Let's go back to some rap analogies. But like Jimmy Iovine, like you saw the Defiant ones, I presume, did you?
No,
I've just seen the Defiant ones. Come on, lads. So it's the new Dr. Dre documentary about how to set up beats, and it's amazing. Like, it's all like, they go through all the history of everyone they've signed, like from N.W.A. I'm such a hip hop head here. Like, I'm not okay. Like, I was a Brit pop head at some stage. Anyway, but they had So they go through the whole history, the NWA, the everything all the way up to like Eminem and all the newer lads and everyone in between. But like Jimmy Iovine is the main dude behind Def Jam. He's the one who signs the deal with Dr. Dre. Like, and I suppose like the biggest thing I nearly got out of it, like I kind of knew a lot of the other stuff, was like Jimmy Iovine's work ethic. He was just like, he did all the stuff for Tom Petty, all the stuff for Bruce Springsteen, like it was amazing. But like his work ethic was off the charts, like just work, work, work. And then when he's finished work, he works. And when he sleeps, he works.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like every kind of like successful, now you hear about all the successful heads that they're just like, they're not necessarily that good at what they do. They're just machines and they work so hard. But like his ex-wife was there, like, and his ex-wife was like, oh, I had to break up with him. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I had to.
Too hard.
Like, well, it wasn't like, she had nothing against him. She seemed to still like him. It's like, he was just crazy. Like, he was obsessed with his work. And he was like, you know, he's multi-billionaire. And you have to judge whatever you judge success on. Like, but I think that's what, yeah, that's kind of what's going on. Like you have to become obsessive. Like, and you are gonna have at this level, you're gonna fall out with your mates. Like, a fella recently over couldn't make a good mate's wedding, and like it's not good. And the girlfriend's gonna be annoyed because you can't make this dinner, and these bits of these struggles happen. It's saying that it's not all doom and gloom. Like, I'm not like, no one is going through our head. And we're here to play because we love playing. But that's what's going on. Yes.
And in a weird way, is being out of the team a little bit not the worst thing that happens to you at some stage in your career, where you're like, okay, well, I need to learn some perspective on this, or is that the worst thing that can possibly happen to you when you put all that time and effort in and you're like not necessarily starting games you feel you should be?
Well, look, it's tough. Last year was a strange circumstance when I was coming back from injury and stuff, like, so like it was and I got myself there, but I got myself there too late. And look, it gives you a perspective, 100%. Like, I suppose.
Does it make you bitter and you use that as your motivation? Like, a little bit of both?
Like, maybe a bit of both. Like, I didn't finish like I wanted to finish, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe if I'm the first year on the team or something, maybe, but it's not. I've been around, I've played enough All Ireland finals to know I want to play in them and I don't want to sit there watching them. So, it's not a bitterness thing, do you know what I mean? I couldn't have wanted anything more than for Dublin to win that game.
Yeah.
But it's not the script that I would have wrote.
But even to get back in to like.
Yeah, no, of course it does. And you have to use like all that, like all the hard work they put into last year. Like, I didn't get to use it. Like, so I put it into my basketball and then I put it into, hopefully put it into this year and it rolls on. So like yeah, I suppose it's kind of how lads want to use their motivation and stuff. But yeah, that's the way it goes, yeah.
You're not finished. Like, it's clear you're not finished. And players who have had the success that you've had and who've reached the heights that you've had could easily have used last year as an excuse to slip away and decide, well, okay, you know, there's loads of other people here now who are going to take my place. I'm happy enough with what I've done. But you clearly didn't decide that. And I'm basing this after a league campaign. So you still want to be here.
Yeah, like 100%. Like, the fickle nature of this thing is that, like, I can be literally trip out of here in the morning, like, as I'm walking out, like, and like, I know this, like, I can't hit you with all the cliches, one game at a time and all that sort of stuff, but like, if you're going for it, you just have to give it everything. You just have to like go all in and become a little Jimmy Iovine, like, just that has to be done. Like, and like, I kind of thought about that. There was a session in January. And it was January, like, and we were only getting into it, like, and I was like lacing my boots and it was lashing rain and it was like, and I was like, I started like in my head, I just started moaning. I was like, oh, I was like, Jesus, do I wanna? And I just had a real self check. I was like, no, actually, well, hold on a second. Like, this is January and I'm like, I'm kind of having that little self doubt. I was like, no, like, you get like the self talk part of it is everything. And I was just like, no, I have to if I start moaning in January, like, I'm gone. I won't do anything. Like, so I was like, I kind of made a distinctive choice to be like, no, like, I'm here because I want to do something. Like,
yeah. And your form's pretty good at the minute.
Yeah. Look, I feel good. Injury is everything. Like, do you know what I mean? If Leo's
outside, people don't understand that you get injured, you don't play well, suddenly you're out of a team because it's really competitive, or if anybody, and I'm not talking just about you, but it's suddenly like, oh, he's not the player he was because you're not 22 anymore.
Like, the numbers got nothing to do with it, but like, do you know what I mean? If Lewis Hamilton's car isn't like, isn't driving, it's breaking, you know what I mean? Like, he's not going to be getting the score as he was. So, and it's no age thing. I just had a few freak kind of impact things. But, I'm good to go. Like the basketball helped me in a big way in the off season, kind of keep myself ticking over. And then you kind of roll on to the league then a lot easier. And then you have a decent league, you can kind of roll into the championship a lot easier. So, look, I haven't broken a fingernail this year. And, I just kind of need to, Who knows what the summer lies ahead, but you kind of need to keep yourself in good form and then give yourself the chance at performance.
Yeah, well, listen, best of luck with it. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah,
who else should we be listening to if we're not listening to
Post Malone. Post Malone. Who you definitely should not be listening to.
Post Malone. We get off. I'm getting too much of a hip hop head these things. So let's. I'm going to shout out the new Dublin singer songwriter Dermot Kennedy. Have you heard of him?
No.
Oh, Dermot Kennedy, check him out.
I've come across his name, I haven't listened to him.
Oh, he's very good. You can just kind of let it play, like. Yeah. Reggie Snow, if you're going to go Irish hip hop. Yeah, he's killing.
Sounds good. There you go.
Yeah, brilliant stuff there from Michael Darren McCauley. He was in studio with us last week. And if you're just joining us, you'll be able to catch the full interview on youtube.com/offtheball. And we'll have the podcast up in the next half an hour or so as well. He was in studio with us last week with thanks to Fanta. And Fanta Sandstorm is back with a bang for 2018, inviting the most adventurous thrill seekers across Ireland to test their limits on the 5,000, or on the 5K, I should say, beach run. Fanta Sandstorm will take place at Dublin's Dollymount Strand on the 9th of June and Kerry's Ballyhig Beach on the 14th of July. Tickets are on sale now and it only costs you €15. Check out hashtag Fanta Sandstorm on social media for further updates.
OTB AM. In association with Air. Get Air Sport Free with Air Broadband.